please mute yourself. And
okay, I am recording as well. Okay, Shalom Aleichem, everybody. So we're continuing the theme of Sugyas in Maseches Megillah, following along with the Daf Yomi program. So it's very interesting that most of the halachas of the Kedushas Beis HaKnesses and the Kedushas Beis Medrash, and the Gemara actually tells us that a Beis Medrash is on a higher level than a Beis HaKnesses. The Gemara tells us that a Bayis Gadol is a Beis Medrash over a Beis HaKnesses. So most of the halachas of the Kedusha of a Beis HaKnesses and a Beis Medrash are all in Maseches Megillah in the Perek B'nei Ho'ir. Now, you might have noticed that in our Gemaras, the Perek B'nei Ho'ir is the fourth Perek, and in the order of the Mishnayos, the orders of the Prakim are reversed, and it's in the third Perek, and that's also the Girs of the Rif. So it's interesting that the Prakim and the Mishnayos are laid out in a different order than the Prakim, the way it's written, the way it's laid out in the Vilna Shas. Now, what are the halachas of a Beis HaKnesses and a Beis Medrash doing in Maseches Megillah? So I found the Tosfos Yomtiv in the beginning of the Perek of B'nei Ho'ir, whether it's the third Perek or the fourth Perek. The Tosfos Yomtiv explains, Aidi Ditani Dine Kriyas Megillah, because the Masechta is speaking about reading the Megillah, so Ra Rabbeinu HaKadosh, so Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who was Masader the Mishnayos, he saw it fit, Lesader Imoim Kriyas Sefer Torah, so he also included in the laws of the reading of the Megillah, the laws of reading the Sefer Torah. So it's very interesting because the halachas of Hagba and Galila are there, the halachas of requiring a minyan for Kriyas HaTorah are there, which parashiyos we read on the various Yom Tovim is there. So all the Hilchos Kriyas HaTorah, whether or not you should roll back the Sefer Torah when you're getting your Aliyah, or whether you should leave it open, all of these details are all in Maseches Megillah as well. Because since we're speaking about Kriyas Megillah, we also speak about Kriyas Sefer Torah, because it's also from the Takanas HaNaviim, says the Tosfos Yomtiv. Ulafisha Kriyasim B'tzibar u'b'beis HaKnesses, since by and large we read the Sefer Torah and the Megillah B'tzibar in a Beis HaKnesses, so rather sadr t'chila Kedushas Beis HaKnesses v'dineha v'hischil b'rachoiv shegam b'mispalim. So it's sort of like a Gilgal. It's like going from one thing to another. Me'inin le'inin ba'isa inin. From one topic to another within similar topics. We're talking about reading the Megillah. We're talking about reading the Sefer Torah. That's usually done in a Beis HaKnesses. So Rebbe chose this Masechta to give us all the halachas of a Beis HaKnesses. So we're going to speak about the sanctity of the Beis HaKnesses. And then in Mitzvah Hashem next week, we'll speak about the rules, the halachas regarding selling a Beis HaKnesses and deconsecrating a Beis HaKnesses. Okay, so the Gemara in Megillah on Daf Chaf Tes Amud Aleph brings a pasuk from Yecheskel. It's a beautiful pasuk, an encouraging pasuk. Perek Yud Aleph Halacha Tes Hapasuk Tes Zayin says the pasuk, says the Navi Yecheskel, Chein Omar Koy Omar Hashem Elokim. So says Hashem, Ki Herchaktem Bagoyim, when I cast you far among the nations, that's our galus. The chi hefeitzoisem ba'aratzis, and I scattered you in all the foreign lands. The ei lahem lemikdash ma'at, I will be for you a miniature sanctuary, a mikdash ma'at. So we use the expression that a Beis HaKnesses is a mikdash ma'at. It's actually a lashon of the pasuk in Yecheskel, mikdash ma'at. Ba'aratzis esher ba'u sham, all the lands where you are there. So the pasuk promises us, Hashem promises us that although we're in Galus and He scattered us among the nations in foreign lands, He will make for us a mikdash ma'at. He'll make for us a mini sanctuary. So the Gemara explains, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Elu bati knesiyos u'bati midrashos shebabavel, that in Babel, in Galus, Babylonia, or any Galus that we find ourselves, this refers to the Beit Bati Knesiyos, the shuls, and the Bati Midrashim in the Galus, in the foreign lands. So these shuls and base Bati Midrashim have the status of a Mikdash Ma'at. Now the Smak, or an early Rishon, in Mitzvah Ches, is Mashma, that the kedusha of a beis hakneses based on this pasuk is mamish adin d'oraisa. So that means that when you enter a shul, according to the smak, you're literally entering a miniature beis hamikdash, and the prohibition to break something in the shul would be an isur d'oraisa, or the prohibition to acting with kalas rosh, doing things that are degrading, inappropriate behavior in the shul, would be an isur d'oraisa according to the smak. The Ran says that this pasuk in Yecheskel is merely an asmachta. It's a basis for what the Rabbanon established. The Ran writes in Maseches Megillah that it's a din de Rabbanon. She'atilu bei chachamim kedusha min devrehem. The Rabbanon created a kedusha min devrehem, a rabbinic kedusha. They consecrated, they sanctified the Bati Knesias and Bati Midrashas with the kedusha de Rabbanon. And it was based on this pasuk that Hashem promises that we'll have a mikdash ma'at. The Gemara Megillah goes on to tell us that there were certain bati midrashim or bati knesios where you would walk in Bavel and you would actually feel the shechina. The shechina was literally there. So based on our adherence to the rules of the kedushas beis haknesses, we can literally enjoy and feel the shechina in the shul. So let's talk about some of the halachas, and let's talk about exemptions to the halacha or exceptions to the halacha, and then we'll tie the two together with an interesting tshuva from Rav Moshe at the end. So the Gemara in Maseches Megillah gives us a list of things that fall under Kalas Rosh. It's probably not an exhaustive list. It's probably, these are the things that are included, but any behavior that we could come up with, which also is not appropriate for a Beis Knesses, would probably fall under this list as well. The Gemara gives us a list of things. Tanu Rabbanan, in Maseches Megillah, Chav Ches Amud Aleph. Bati Knesios, Ein Noy Hagen Behen Kalas Rosh. We're not allowed to act with lightheadedness, with levity, in a Beis HaKnesses. So here's a list. Ein Noy Chlin Behen. We're not allowed to eat in the actual sanctuary. Ve'ein Shoysin Behen. We can't drink in the actual sanctuary, in the Beis HaKnesses. We'll soon see why we sometimes find that we do eat there. Ein ni oisin bahen, you wouldn't be able to adorn yourself there. So, for example, you wouldn't be allowed to comb your hair in the shul. You know how sometimes you go back in Bnei Israel, you go back and you can see your reflection on the alarm. Leo, I learned that from you, to check my tefillin on that. On that reflection. So imagine if somebody would put his tie on and he wants to see how his tie looks. He walks or he brushes his hair, he combs his hair. So that would be inappropriate to be ni'usin behen, to adorn, to use the Beis HaKnesses as a dressing room of sorts. That would be another example of kalas rosh. Ein nechnosin behen b'pnei achama, b'chama b'pnei achama, or b'gishamim b'pnei achama. So this is interesting. You can't use the Beis HaKnesses as a safe haven. Imagine if it starts pouring outside. So you wouldn't be able to run into the shul just as a, in order to save yourself from the rain or from the heat. You enjoy the air conditioning, so you go into the shul just for the sake of cooling down with the air conditioning. It's a strong air conditioning system or a heater. You can't do that. That would be an inappropriate use of the shul. To enter the shul, but Bechama b'pnei achama or gishamim b'pnei agishamim. Ve'ein maspidim behen hesped shel yachid. You can't use the shul as a place to eulogize. Basically, just like a gathering, it's a convenient place to gather. You can't do that in a shul. Abul koirin behen, but you are allowed to learn chumish in the shul. Shoinin behen, you're allowed to learn mishnayis in the shul. So, for example, it's completely appropriate to use the shul as a gathering place. If you have a Torah lecture going on, a speaker who's going to say words of the Soiris. I remember not too long ago, but before Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we had a speaker in B'nai Israel, so that's totally an appropriate use to gather, to have a place to learn. U'maspidin behen hesped shel rabim. So this I found to be interesting, that you're allowed to have a public eulogy. And the Gemara there explains that if for whatever reason, you expect a big turnout by that levaya. So not even necessarily that a Talmud Chacham was nifter, but if a prominent member of the community, Lo Yaleinu, Hashem should spare us, passes away, or even if a prominent family loses someone, so you expect a big turnout, you would be allowed to use the shul because it's simply a large enough space, and we understand that you're using the shul because this is the only space that could accommodate all of those people. It's interesting that this is allowed. So the halacha is, these are the things that you're not supposed to use the shul for, with the exception of learning or even a hesped shel rabbin. Amar Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda says, Emosai b'yeshuvan aval b'chorbanan menichin oysen v'oil behen asavim v'yitlush m'tei agmas nefesh. Rav Yehuda has an interesting halacha that we're going to soon see in the next item, item Hey, it's going to be explained more thoroughly. But Rabbi Yehuda says, if a Beis HaKnesses ever falls into disuse, so you should deliberately not take care of the Beis HaKnesses. You should allow it to get overgrown with weeds and so forth. That way people will feel bad. They'll have agmas nefesh, and people will give like a sigh that they remember when the shul was upkept and when people used to use the shul, and hopefully that will motivate the people to once again start using the shul. So it's interesting that when the shul falls into disuse, then you almost should allow the shul to get into disrepair because you want to inspire people to use the shul and to fix the shul up again. So Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah, he elaborates on this halacha. What about a shul when it's in disuse? So the Mishnah tells us, Oid Omer Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says another thing. Beis HaKnesses Shechorav, if a Beis HaKnesses is desolate, which means that it's not being used, literally Chorav means it fell apart, but it's no longer in use. Still, says Rabbi Yehuda, Ein Maspidin B'Soicha, you still can't just have eulogies there for no reason. Ein Mafshilin B'Soicha Chavalim, you can't use it as a storage house to put bundles or boxes there for storage. Ein Parsin L'Soicha Mitzudais, you can't set traps there to catch animals. You can't spread fruit on the roof of the Beis HaKnesses, even after it's fell into disuse. You can't use this building as a shortcut. And the Pasuk tells us, this is a Pasuk in the Teuchacha. Hashem says, I'm going to lay your Beis HaMikdash desolate, referring to the actual Beis HaMikdash. But the Pasuk says, Hashimoisius Mikdashaychem. The Pasuk says, I will destroy your Mikdash. So it's an interesting play on words. Even after it's destroyed, it still retains the status of a Mikdash. Because if once it falls into disuse, it loses its status, then the Pasuk should have said, as Mikdashaychem Hashimoisi, your Mikdash I will destroy. Since the Pasuk says, I will destroy your Mikdash, and it calls it, the Pasuk refers to it as a Mikdash, even after it was destroyed. So says Rabbi Yehuda, Kedushasan af kishahein shomimin, that it retains its Kedusha even after it's desolate, even though it's no longer being used, or even though it fell into disrepair. The halacha is it retains its Kedusha. Alu bayasavim, if it becomes overgrown, lo yitloish, don't care for the property. You should deliberately let the property get overgrown. Mipnei agmas nefesh, and that way people will feel bad, and hopefully every time you pass by the old shul, it'll inspire the people, you know, maybe we should really repair the shul and start using the shul again. Or maybe, as we'll see next week, we can sometimes sell the shul and use the money for the benefit of the community. So that might motivate the people to do something about it. So the Gemara is telling us clearly that Bati Knesios and Bati Midrashois are considered a Mikdash Ma'at. It's considered a miniature Beis HaMikdash. They have a certain level of sanctity, of Kedusha. And then between the Gemara and the Mishnah, it becomes clear that this applies whether the shul is standing and the shul is in use, or even if the shul falls into disuse. If nothing is done, the shul retains the same level of sanctity, and you're still not allowed to use the old desolate building for mundane purposes, because Hashimoisius Mikdashechem, even after it's destroyed, even after it lies in waste, it's still considered a mikdash. It still has the sanctity. And again, we'll see next week ways of deconsecrating a Beis HaKnesses, Emet Hashem. Now, the Gemara...
The whole building?
Oh, that's a good question. So that's a very good question. So this applies to the sanctuary. It doesn't apply to the hallway or to the social hall downstairs, because the sanctuary is the room that was designated for the learning and for the davening.
But you can use the rest of the building if you want to come out in the rain.
That's correct.
Okay.
Now, the Gemara tells us, and we're going to see now a few exceptions. We're going to learn now the parameters of these exceptions, and then we're going to tie it together at the end. So the Gemara tells us like this: Omar Rava, Chachamim b'talmidehem, that Talmidei Chachamim and their students who are spending their time learning, mutarin, they're allowed to use the shul, to use the base medrash for semi-mundane purposes. Obviously, they have to observe the level of kedusha of the base medrash, but they have a certain leniency. We relax the halachas for them. The Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, because Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, my bey rabbanon, why do we refer to as a base medrash, as a bey rabbanon? So the word bey in Aramaic, bey rabbanon means the house of the rabbanon, the house. It's interesting because this reminds me that I once read about the Kelm Yeshiva in Europe. The Kelm Yeshiva was a yeshiva that totally focused, besides the learning, they totally focused on Musar and on self-discipline. And this was from Rav Simcha Zissel of Kelm, one of the prime disciples of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. And it was in a city of Kelm, and it was known as the Kelm, the Talmud Torah of Kelm. And they used to refer to the yeshiva as the house. This is the house. Why do they call it a house? Because they wanted to instill in the Talmidim that this base medrash is your home. It's your house. Take care of it the same way you would your home. Would anybody dream of like leaving tissues lying around? You know, sometimes a person leaves their, after davening, they leave their spot and the chair is pulled out or the tissues are left over. Would anybody do that with their dining room or their living room? You want it to look nice. So the Alter of Kelm, Rav Simcha Zissel Zatzal, he used to refer to the Talmud Torah of Kelm, the yeshiva of Kelm, as their house, in order to give the flavor, to give the sense that care about the Beis Medrash just as much as you care about your own home, to beautify it and to treat it with decorum and respect. So in any case, the Gemara says, my bey rabbanan, why is a Beis Medrash referred to as a bey rabbanan, the house, the home of the rabbanan? So we learn Beis of the rabbanan, it's the house of the rabbanan. So we actually learn from this expression that a Beis Medrash is referred to as the bey rabbanan, that the rabbanan who are using the house are allowed to treat it like their home. And since they're spending time learning in the Beis Medrash, we relax the rules of Kedushas Beis HaMedrash for them, and they're allowed to use it as their home. They're allowed to eat there. They're allowed to put their head down to sleep there. Things that you normally would not be permitted to do in a shul or a Beis Medrash, the Bei Rabbanan, the Talmidei Chachamim are allowed to. Now, you don't have to get like you don't have to be a card carrying Rabbanan, or you don't have to be a kolel guy in order to be considered a Bei Rabbanan. If a person is spending the day learning in the shul, so then he would get these exemptions because, like the Gemara tells us in Chagiga, a bar bei rav dechad yoyma, if a person is spending the day learning in the shul, so then he gets these exemptions, he would be allowed to eat or drink in the shul because he's spending his day learning there. He's a rabbanan, he's using the shul. The reason why it's referred to as a bei rabbanan is because it's a base of the rabbanan. We treat the base medrash like it's the home of the rabbanan. So we learn from here, says the Gemara, that for the Chachamim, for people spending time in the shul, a long period of time during the day, in the shul, a person is learning in the shul on a Sunday. A Sunday, he's home from work, a day off, he's spending a few hours in the shul, so then he would be allowed to eat or drink in the shul because it's facilitating his learning. He's spending the day learning in the shul. It's like it's his home. So for the Chachamim, they permit a person who's learning there most of the day because it's considered his house. So now we're going to ask a kasha, we're going to ask a question, and based on the answers of the Mefarshim, we're going to see what the parameters of this halacha is. The Gemara tells us a halacha which actually seems to contradict what we just said. We have a Gemara that Ravina and Rav Abba Bar Masna, two Talmudic sages, Ravina and Ravada Bar Masna, have a kaimi. They were standing outside, Vishwali Shiltame Rava, and they were asking the great Rava a question. So we're having a discussion between three sages of the Talmud. Asa Zilcha de Mitra. All of a sudden, it was a downpour. It started pouring. Aili Lebe Knishta. They entered the Beis HaKnesses. They went into the shul, presumably to escape the rain. Amri, they said, so they had a clause. They clarified their actions. They explained their actions. Haida Ailina Lebe Knishta. This that we went into the shul, Lav Mishum Mitra. It's not because of the rain. Because we said before, one of the things you're not allowed to do is to enter the shul to escape the rain. You can't just use the shul as a escape haven to escape the rain. The reason we went into the shul was not merely to escape the rain. Lav mishum mitra, it's not because of the rain. Ela mishum deshmaitze boitzi lusa kiyoyme deistina. It's because learning needs clarity like a day where the sweet northern wind is blowing. In other words, we're standing outside learning. We were having a discussion, a Torah discussion. It started to pour, so we didn't merely enter the shul to escape getting wet. We entered the shul because the rain was interfering with our learning, because we were having trouble understanding the discussion, and we needed to have the clarity. We needed to have tzilusa, like a day where there's a sweet northern wind. So we entered the shul in order to facilitate the learning. So the Rabbanon clarified that they never would have entered the shul just for their own convenience. They only entered the shul because they were in the middle of learning, and it would help promote the learning by entering the shul and escaping the rain. It wasn't merely to escape the rain for their own purposes. There's another example there in the Gemara. Omer le Ravacha b'rei de Rava le Rav Ashi. I itzrich le inish le mikri gavra mi be knishta. Imagine if somebody is in the shul, and as per regulations of Bnei Israel and other shuls, you're expected to turn your cell phone off before you enter the sanctuary. I don't know if they still have that sign outside the sanctuary, but there was a rule at one point not to have a running cell phone in the shul. So imagine if somebody's sitting in the shul learning, and somebody outside wants to fetch somebody in the shul. So you can't just call them up. You have to enter the shul. Entering the shul for your own purpose, merely to fetch somebody out of the shul, to call someone, that's considered entering the shul for an inappropriate manner. You have to use the shul, the sanctity of the shul. To simply go into the shul to call out your friend does not justify entering the shul. It's incredible, the level of kedusha. So the Gemara tells us, Omale Ravacha b'rei de Rava de Ravashi, I itzrich le inish le mikri gavra, mi be knishta. If I have to go into the shul to call someone, my, what's the proper way of entering the shul? Simply to walk in and call my friend out of the Beis Medrash? That's not appropriate use of the shul. You can't just walk in for no reason. Omer le, eat surma mirabbananhu. So the answer is like this. When you're going into the shul to call someone out, you have to make use of the shul. So if you're a tzur mimirabanan, if you're learned, lema hilchasa, say a halacha, walk into the shul, pull out a Mishnah Berurah for a second and learn a halacha, and then call your friend because you justifiably entered the sanctuary. Itanahu, if you learn Mishnayas, lema masnesit, learn a Mishnah, walk into the shul. The real reason why you're going into the shul is to call somebody out. But that would be, that's not a justifiable excuse to just enter the sanctuary for no reason, just to call somebody out. So walk in, learn a halacha, learn a Mishnah. Ikarahu, if you learn Chumash, lema psuka. So learn a pasuk. Ve'iloi, and if you can't even do that, lema leili yenuka, emeli psukach. So maybe there'll be a child learning in the shul. In those days, they used to have the little cheder. The children were learning in the shul. So ask a child, what are you learning? And the child will tell you a pasuk. It's interesting because the Gemara tells us in a few places, if you ever ask a child what pasuk you're learning and the child tells you a pasuk, that pasuk sometimes is almost like a prophecy. It's a bit of a nevuah because the Gemara tells us in Baba Basra that nowadays prophecy was taken away from us, from the adults, and it was given to the children who are learning Torah and purity. So if you ever ask a child, what pasuk are you learning, and the child tells you a pasuk, and the pasuk particularly resonates with you, or it has something to do, it has a message to you, that, hey, I was wondering about that, or that's amazing, the coincidence, because the pasuk that you're learning is exactly what I was wondering about. So that's because the child's pasuk sometimes has a little shmek of nevuah to it. So if you know how to learn Gemara or Halacha, learn. If you know how to learn a Mishnah, first learn a Mishnah. If you know how to learn a pasuk, learn a pasuk. Ask a child, what are you learning in cheder, in school? Inami, if none of the above applies, nishi porta, then tarry, stay for a few minutes in the shul. And this is interesting. Merely walking into the shul and sitting down in the shul is considered a mitzvah, because the pasuk says, Ashrei yoshvei veisecha, fortunate are those who sit in your house, who spend time in your house. So merely walking into the shul and sitting down and spending time in the and absorbing the avir, absorbing the feeling, the scent, the experience of kedusha in the shul, also justifies entrance to the shul. And then nekum, then get up, and then call your friend out. So you want to just run into shul to call someone out, that you can't do. Walk into the shul, spend some time learning or saying a tehillim or mishnah or halacha, or even just sitting down for a moment just to enjoy the experience of being in the shul, and then call your friend out. So we have two examples where the Chachamim themselves seem to be obligated to observe the halachas of the Beis HaKnesses. Number one, Rava was learning with his Talmidim. Ravina and Ravada Bar Masna. They were learning outside. It started to pour, and they went inside, and they had to justify that. They had to explain that the reason why we went inside was not merely to escape the rain. The reason why we went inside was because we were having trouble with our learning. The learning needs a certain clarity, a certain peace of mind. So we had to escape the rain in order to continue the learning. Apparently, the Chachamim felt compelled to justify why they came into the shul, because ordinarily you can't enter the shul merely to escape the rain. And the second example was that if you want to fetch somebody from the Beis Medrash, from the Beis HaKnesses, you have to justify your entrance. So you yourself have to walk in and learn something or spend some time before you can call out your friend. And it says that it's summa mirabanan, even somebody who's learned it has to sit down and learn something before he calls somebody out. So we see from here that the rabbanan, they don't have a green light. They don't have a blanket heter to just treat the Beis Medrash and Beis Knesses as their home. They also have to observe the laws, the halachas of the Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. So the Mefarshim ask in item tests that if the Chachamim are mutter, if these halachas don't apply to the Chachamim, then why was Rava and Ravada Bar Masna, why were they strict not to enter to escape the rain? If they're Rabbanan and they anyway have the right to treat the Beis HaMedrash and Beis HaKnesses as their home, why can't they simply enter to escape the rain? Why did they feel compelled to justify that we entered the shul in order to continue learning? And why does a Tzuma Mirabanan, why does a rabbinical student, why does he have to sit down and learn something before he calls his friend out of the shul? If he has a green light to treat the shul as his own home because he spends time in the shul, why does he have to conform to the halacha? So we see from all of this that it's not so simple. Even the Chachamim, even people that are spending time learning in the shul, they do have to look to observe some level of Kedusha in the shul. And there are three answers that I found how to reconcile, to give a little bit of a parameter, to what extent do they have to keep the halacha, and to what extent are the halachas relaxed for them. So the Rambam says like this. The Rambam in Hilchas Tefillah, Perek Yud Aleph, Halacha Vav. So he quotes the Gemara, he lists a few things, and the way he explains the exemption for Chachamim sheds some light on the question. Bati Knesius u Bati Midrashis, Ein Noihegen Bohen Kalas Rosh. He quotes the Gemara. He goin Tzchoik. See, he translates the examples of the Gemara into more modern examples. You can't joke around in the shul. Hitul, you can't be lightheaded. Sicha Betela. You can't do sicha b'teila, you can't speak about idle chatter. It's very interesting because the Mishnah, the Paiskim say that the truth is you're never allowed to have idle chatter for no reason. We have to watch every word that we speak. So idle chatter means non-Torah discussions that are still considered important, discussing our livelihood, discussing the errands, things that we need to do during the day. It goes without saying that we can't speak Lashon Hara or we can't make crude jokes or things like that. These are things that we're never supposed to do. So idle chatter in this context means permissible speech that we normally would be allowed to engage in, like, for example, discussing parnasa, livelihood, discussing our errands, how we're going to spend our day, things that we're permitted to discuss, but not in the shul. Ein oichlin behen, the Rambam quotes, you can't eat in the shul, you can't drink in the shul, you can't adorn yourself, you can't use the shul as like a dressing room of sorts, you can't just dray around metailin behen. And he brings the Gemara, you can't enter because you want to escape the sun, you want to escape the rain, you can't do any of that. Look how the Rambam brings the exemption of Talmidei Chachamim. The Chachamim v'talmideihem. However, the Chachamim and the Talmidim, mutarim lechol v'lishtois behen, they're allowed to eat and drink in the shul, midoichak, because we needed, this is a necessary exemption, midoichak. It's a forced exemption. The Chachamim had to allow the Chachamim to eat and drink in the shul, because since they're spending time in the shul learning, in order for them to eat or drink, they would have to leave the shul, and it would cause bittul Torah. It would waste the time that they've devoted to the learning. So they're allowed to take a coffee and have it in the sanctuary or a little piece of cake, because otherwise they would have to exit and it would take up too much time. So the Chachamim and the Talmidim are allowed to eat or drink in the shul midoichek, because they're forced to midoichek. We had to permit this. It's like a shas hatchak, because it's a necessary exemption that we have to give. So the Gemara says that the Talmidei Chachamim are allowed to use the Beis Medrash or the shul because it's as if it's their house. So the assumption was that they can literally treat the shul as if it's their home, and they're completely exempt from any of these strictures of the Beis HaKnesses. But the question was that even Rava had to justify his actions when he entered the shul because of the rain. Or a Talmud Chacham who's going in to call somebody out has to first spend some time learning in the shul before he calls out his friend. So it's not so simple that it's like a house. So the Rambam seems to be answering this question by saying that it's not really their home. They can't treat the shul as their home. Even though the Gemara says it's Bei Rabbanan, they can't really treat it as their home. The heter was only midoichek. The heter is only under extenuating circumstances that they're allowed to use the Beis Medrash as their home. That's what the Kesef Mishnah says. The Kesef Mishnah, when he explains this line of the Rambam, the Kesef Mishnah explains the following. I quoted the Kesef Mishnah here in item Yud Aleph. Let's learn the Kesef Mishnah together. Hare Rava hu dekaamar chachamim v'talmideihem mutarim. Rava himself, why did Rava have to say that he's only entering the shul to facilitate the learning? He wasn't entering the shul to escape the rain. Rava himself was the one who said earlier that the Chachamim and the Talmidim are allowed because it's like it's their home. Behechi kamar hacha, why is Rava saying here, the ilav mishum deshmaitze baitzilusa, if not for the fact that the learning needed the clarity, lehavi aili, he wouldn't have entered the shul to escape the rain. I thought that Rava himself said that Talmidei Chachamim are allowed to use the shul as their home. Elavadai, so says the Kesef Mishnah, this is the author of the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Kairo, says the Kesef Mishnah, Vadai ki ka'omer demutarim, when Rava says that they're mutter, they're permitted, hainu b'shas hatchak, it's only permitted under extenuating circumstances, v'oz mutarim, and then they're permitted, only then are they permitted to eat or to drink. But if it's not an extenuating circumstance, then even the Chachamim are forbidden, are prohibited from using the shul for mundane purposes. As we see from the story of the rain, of the downpour, the ilav shmaitz only havu aili, that it had it not been for the fact that they were engaged in learning, they would not have entered to spare themselves the rain. Explains the Kesef Mishnah, because this was not considered an extenuating circumstance. Why can't they just go home? Why can't they just find some other shelter to escape the rain? They can go home. Shahar bebenei adam hokem b'shuk be'ez geshamim. You're not the only one. Plenty of people have to walk in the marketplace when it's raining, and they have to find shelter some other way. So just because you're a rabbi, just because you're a Talmud Chacham, and you spend your time learning, it doesn't give you the excuse to use the shul to escape the rain. Because we only permit the use of the shul for extenuating circumstances. And escaping the rain doesn't justify that. You think you're the only person getting wet? There are plenty of people outside getting wet. So why should you have an exemption to run into the shul? Aval im haya makam dachak l'talmidim. So the Kesef Mishnah gives us an example. So what is considered an extenuating circumstance? If there are kanai nahara, a lot of talmidim who are learning, and there's no place for them, the ein lehem makam lecha v'lishtas v'lisha, and there's no place to eat or drink or sleep, mutter, then only then is it permitted. Kein nirali, says the Kesef Mishnah. So the Kesef Mishnah he catches on to this diuk of the Rambam, that the Rambam is only permitting the Chachamim and the Talmidim to eat in the shul midoichik, which means only under extenuating circumstances. And the Kesef Mishnah almost does away with this entire permit, because he says you wouldn't be able to run into the shul to escape the rain. The only reason why the Talmidim could eat in the shul is because there are a lot of Talmidim, bli ayin hara, and there's no other place for them to eat or drink. We don't have proper dining facilities. So therefore, they're allowed to eat in the Beis Medrash. It would seem from the Kesef Mishnah, a very strict approach, that even if you're spending your time learning in the shul, if there is a convenient place where you can go, so imagine if you're learning in the shul and you want to take a coffee, you want to take a piece of cake because you're feeling a little bit tired, fatigued from the learning, you want to continue learning. So you'd be required to go out into the lobby, or you'd be required to go downstairs, because it's not necessary to eat in the shul and to compromise the kedusha of the Beis HaKnesses. Even though the Gemara says, Rava says, that the shul is like the home of the Rabbanan, that's just a nice way of saying that we gave you a heter if there are extenuating circumstances. Bidoichak, only if there's a pressing need. But if there's just as convenient a way to maintain the sanctity of the Beis Medrash, then you'd be required to do so. So you often find, even in a Beis Medrash setting, that there's a coffee room and people would go out to have a coffee. Some people would bring the coffee into the shul, some people don't. Very often there's a policy. Sometimes they don't want people bringing cups of coffee or food into the shul because it's going to spill, it's going to stain the carpet, or because it's going to make a mess. People are going to inevitably forget to remove their cups, and it's just another job now for the gabbai to do, to collect all the tissues and the cups afterwards. So sometimes there's a policy not to allow it in the first place. But even as far as the halacha is concerned, it would only be permitted under extenuating circumstances. So this is the Kesef Mishnah's understanding of the Rambam. The Magen Avraham has a more of a lenient interpretation of the Rambam. The Magen Avraham also agrees that the Rambam is trying to reconcile the two rulings of Rava, but the Magen Avraham has a different approach. It makes it a little bit easier in a sense. The Magen Avraham writes in Simen Kuf Nun Aleph Sifkat and Beis, he learns the Rambam, the rak achila ushtia hetiru l'tamidei chacham, that what the Rambam means to say is not that across the board, we only permit it if it's an extenuating situation. As if every time the person who's learning in the shul has to decide, do I really need to do this right now here? The Magen Avraham has a more lenient interpretation of the Rambam. What the Rambam means to say is that a Talmud Chacham, even if you're spending your time learning in the shul, you can't just use the shul for any purpose. The permit only applies to achila and shtiyah, that eating and drinking. That's what they permitted the Talmud Chacham to do, but other uses would be prohibited, because even Talmidei Chachamim are obliged to keep the Moira HaMikdash, to keep the reverence to the Mikdash Ma'at. So the Magen Avraham, he looks at the words of the Rambam from a different perspective. It's true that the Rambam is saying that we permit you to eat and drink while you're spending time in the shul learning. We permit you to eat and drink midoichik. We permitted it because we needed to. But that doesn't mean that as strict as the Kesef Mishnah put it, that if there would be accommodations to eat or drink, you'd be required to go downstairs to the social hall to avail yourselves of the accommodations. What the Rambam means to say is that this leniency applies strictly, exclusively to eating and drinking. That's why the Rambam says, midoichet. We permitted it because we needed to. We didn't give you a blanket heter. We permitted you to eat or drink. But eating or drink itself is a blanket heter. You don't have to try to find another etza, another solution. You're allowed to eat or drink in the shul while you're learning there, just as a blanket heter. So we have so far the Kesef Mishnah. The Kesef Mishnah takes the Rambam's words across the board that a Talmud Chacham has to assess every time if what he's doing in the shul is necessary or not. And that's why the Rambam says midoichek. It's only permitted under extenuating circumstances. But the Magen Avraham has a more lenient interpretation of the Rambam, that the Talmud Chacham, if you're spending time learning in the shul, you can eat or drink as a rule. You don't have to find some other solution. It's not a last resort. It's not extenuating circumstances. You can simply eat or drink in the shul while you're learning there. The reason the Rambam says midoichik, he doesn't mean to require you to find a better solution for the eating or drinking part. He just means to preclude using the shul for other purposes. Because the heter to eat and drink was not a blanket heter. It was only a heter that we gave you because we needed to give you that heter. That's how the Magen Avraham understands the Rambam. The difference in opinion would be, would the Talmud Chacham be allowed, who's spending time learning in the shul, would he be allowed to eat or drink while he's learning with a clear conscience? According to the Kesef Mishnah, it's only if he has no other solution. But according to the Magen Avraham, it's the eating and drinking, as far as eating and drinking go, it's a blanket heter. The Ran has a whole different approach. The Ran says that, what was the contradiction? The contradiction was that on the one hand, Rava himself was the one who calls the Beis Medrash the Bei Rabbanan, that the Beis Medrash has the status of the Talmidei Chachamim's home, which implies they can use it for mundane purposes because for all intents and purposes, it's like it's their home. But on the other hand, when it came to the shul, Rava had to justify going in to escape the rain. So the Ran has a whole different perspective. The Ran says, Mashmali dehainu bebeis medrash. The answer is that the heter of Rava, that the Talmidei Chacham and people spending their time learning, they're allowed to use the Beis Medrash as their home. That's a Beis Medrash, because the Beis Medrash is where you're learning. Ulefi sha'imdim sham kol hayom, because you're there all day. Like it says, my Bei Rabbanon, Beis the Rabbanon. That's why we're referring specifically to a Beis Medrash. Avo Beis Knesses lo, but a shul not, because a shul is not usually used all day for learning purposes. The shul is usually used for davening. So the Talmud Chacham, the rabbinical student, doesn't have an excuse to enter the shul to escape the rain, because he doesn't spend his time learning there. That's not usually the use of the shul. The shul is usually primarily designated for davening. So even a person who spends his time learning is not spending all day in the shul. He's spending all day in the Beis Medrash. So the Ran makes a distinction between a Beis HaKnesses and a Beis HaMedrash. At first it sounds funny, because a Beis Medrash has a higher level of sanctity than a shul. But when the Ran explains himself, it becomes very clear. Because the heter is that the Beis Medrash is a Bei Rabbanan. The Beis Medrash is the home of the people who are spending their time learning. And that's only the Beis Medrash, because that's where you spend your time learning. You don't ordinarily spend long amounts of time in the shul learning, because that's not what the shul is designated for. So according to the Kesef Mishnah, this is an item Yudalid, according to the Kesef Mishnah, Talmidei Chachamim are allowed to do whatever they need to do in a shul or a Beis Medrash, but it's only midoichek, only under extenuating circumstances, if they don't have any other place to do it. Each time they have to assess if what they're doing is necessary or not. That's how the Kesef Mishnah looks at it. He doesn't make a distinction between a Beis Medrash or a shul. He doesn't make a distinction between eating or drinking or anything else. You have to assess why you're going in. According to the Magen Avraham, they're mutter to eat and drink, but they're not allowed to do anything else. And according to the Ran, in a Beis Medrash, they'd be allowed to do everything, because the Beis Medrash, where they spend their time, it's literally their home. It's a Beis HaDerabanan, because they're there all day. But in a Beis HaKnesses, it would be Aser. The Shulchan Aruch in Simin Kuf Nun Aleph Sif Aleph, he brings the halacha like this: Bati Knesias u Bati Midrashis, Shuls and Bati Midrashim, Ein Noigim Hem Kalas Roish. He gives you the whole list of things that you're not supposed to do, inappropriate behaviors in a shul or a beis medrash, and says the Shulchan Aruch, Tamidei Chachamim and Tamideim Mutarim Lecha Velishtas Behem Midoichik. So if you notice, the Shulchan Aruch brings word for word the words of the Rambam. He doesn't differentiate between a shul or a base medrash. He doesn't differentiate between eating or drinking or sleeping or doing anything else. He says, midoichik. That's the Kesef Mishnah's understanding of the Rambam. Hagah, the Ramah says, yesh oimrim, the base medrash afilu shaloi midoichik shari. The Ramah brings the Ran, that there are those who say, who are the those that say the Ran, that a base medrash, if you're spending your time learning, where that's what it's designated for, you're allowed to eat or drink, even not midoichak, even if you have some other solution, another resort. You still are allowed to eat or drink while you're learning in the Beis Medrash, because the Beis Medrash is designated for the learning. That's where you spend your time learning, and you're allowed to have a coffee or a little piece of cake or something while you're learning in the Beis Medrash. That would be the Ran. And this is exactly what we said, that according to the Rambam, the difference is not a basic knesset and a base medrash. The difference is midoichek, if it's extenuating circumstances versus not extenuating circumstances. According to the Ran, the difference is a base knesset versus a base medrash. The reason why Rava said that the base medrash is permitted is because it's a bay rabbanon. It's like a home of the rabbanon. When you're spending your time learning in the base medrash, it's like it's your home. A shul, that's when Rava was careful not to enter because of the rain. So the difference would be a very practical difference. If you're spending your time learning and it's raining outside, could you use the base medrash to escape the rain? According to the Rambam, no. According to the Ran, yeah, because the base medrash is like your home if you're spending your time learning there. Okay, there's another halacha in Kuf Nun Aleph. It says there, halacha gimel, ein yeshenim b'beis knesses. You're not allowed to sleep in a beis knesses, afil shines arai, even temporarily. You should try to avoid even putting your head down in the Beis HaKnesses. It's interesting because I saw that someone says, if you notice somebody dozing off during the rabbi's sermon, so you should wake him up because you're not supposed to sleep in the Beis HaKnesses. You know, they also have a similar question if somebody's dozing outside on Sukkos, outside the sukkah, he's dozing during the rabbi's sermon. So is there an issue to wake him up? So I noticed, I actually saw someone say that you shouldn't sleep in a Beis HaKnesses even during the sermon. Abo bebeis ha-medrash mutter. But in a Beis Medrash, it's permitted. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. The Shachin Yoredeya says that the Shulchan Aruch is speaking about a casual, a little cat nap. Putting your head down is mutter in a Beis Medrash. Rabbi Kiva Eger brings, based on the Ran, that a Talmud Chacham is allowed to go to sleep in the Beis Medrash because a Beis Medrash is like his home. So according to the Ran, this halacha in Shulchan Aruch, that a base medrash, you're allowed to take a little nap, would be very consistent with the Ran's understanding that a base medrash is different than a base haknesses, because if you're spending your time learning there, you'd be able to use it as your home. Okay, there's a whole nother exception. This, until now, we were discussing somebody who's spending the day learning. So he has an exception, the Rambam, the Magen Avram, the Beis Yosef, the Kesef Mishnah, and the Ran, someone spending his time learning. Now we have a whole other exception. The Gemara says like this. In item Yud Zayin, the Gemara says, Omer Rav Asi, Bati Knesias Sheb Bavel Al Tnai Heinasuyin. That a shul in Bavel is built conditionally. Now, what does that mean, it's built conditionally? The Gemara tells us that in Bavel, and the Paiskim discuss, is this only exclusive to Bavel, or is this everywhere? The Paiskim assume that this applies everywhere. That when you build a shul, or when you designate a building for a shul, it's done with a stipulation. There's an unspoken stipulation, or maybe it was even spoken out. There's a stipulation, there's an understanding that it's a tenai, it's conditional, and that they reserve the rights to use it for personal uses as well. Says the Gemara, Afo pike, nevertheless, ein noigin mehen kalas roish, umay niu cheshboinois. Nevertheless, you can't use the shul for things that are totally kalas roish, that are totally degrading activities, such as cheshboinois, calculations, just using it like to make like a shopping list or something, or cheshboinois. So that would be something that would be inappropriate even after the stipulation. So now, the Gemara tells us that the shuls of Bavel were constructed conditionally. The Mefarshim ask the same exact question that we were discussing regarding Talmidei Chachamim. The question was that if a Talmud Chacham can treat a Beis Medrash as his home, why did Rava have to justify entering the shul to avoid the rain? So the Mefarshim asked the identical question in light of Rav Asi's halacha. Rav Asi said that the shuls in Bavel are built conditionally. So the Mefarshim asked an item Yudches. The Mefarshim asked the exact same question they asked before. Lama choishish Rava milukanes beis haknesses v'yashamim. Why did Rava have to justify entering the shul to escape the rain in Bavdi Knesses Sheva Bavel nasu al tanai? If the Beis HaKnesses was built conditionally and that we reserve the right to use it for personal use, so again, why did Rava have to justify entering the shul to avoid the rain? Before we were asking, if Rava is a Talmud Chacham and he spends his time learning there, why did he have to justify entering? So we discussed it. Now we're asking a second question. If the shuls are built conditionally, why did Rava again have to justify? Why couldn't he file for the conditional exemption? So why did Rava have to justify if the shuls are built on tanai, on condition? So again, we have three different answers, and these answers are all discussed l'halacha. The Shita of Tosfos and the Rush is that the tanai, the condition, only helps when the shul is no longer in use, right? We mentioned before that the Kedusha of the shul would ordinarily apply whether the shul is in use or even if the shul is no longer in use. The condition only helps if and when the shul is no longer in use. Without the condition, you would have to observe the same level of kedusha when the shul is no longer in use as if it was in use. We said before, Hashimoisius mikdashechem, that automatically the kedusha applies even after the shul is desolate, is no longer in use. The condition only helps that when the shul is no longer in use, then you're allowed to use the shul for mundane purposes. That's what the condition that you made on day one when you built the shul, that's what the condition would help for. It would not help as long as the shul is in use, it's being used as a shul or a beis medrash. It would only help after the shul is no longer in use. So you know why Rava had to justify entering the shul to avoid the rain? I'm not entering the shul because it's raining outside. I'm entering the shul in order to promote the learning, to facilitate the learning. Because while the shul is an existing shul, the condition doesn't help. That's the shita of the Tosfos and the Rosh. The shita of the Ramban is similar to what we brought before, that the tanai only helps to be matir mipnei doichek. The same kind of answer that the Rambam said before for Talmidei Chachamim, that they automatically have a leniency with Mei Adoichik under extenuating circumstances, the same thing applies conditionally for everybody, even if you're not spending your day learning in the Beis Medrash. But the condition helps, the stipulation helps for extenuating circumstances. What would be an example of extenuating circumstances? If the shul has an event, a fundraising event, the shul has to host poor people, they need a large space, and they can't accommodate the space anywhere else. That would be examples, mipnei hadoichik, extenuating circumstances. That's what the condition helps for. But to merely enter the shul because it's raining outside, like we said before, like the Kesef Mishnah said before, many people have to suffer walking in the rain. Get yourself an umbrella. That's not considered an extenuating circumstance, and therefore you would not be allowed to avail yourself of the stipulation just in order to avoid the rain. So the Ramban says that the condition works similar to how we said before, that Talmidei Chachamim have a certain leniency. That's all the condition gives you. But it doesn't give you a green light to use the shul for mundane purposes. Another example that the Mefarshim say is that the condition helps for a mitzvah purpose. So therefore, you'd be allowed to use the shul, the sanctuary, for shalosh shudas. Very often they have shalosh shudas in the actual sanctuary. That's because we're relying on the opinion of the Ramban, although it's not proper to eat or drink in the shul. But the stipulation that they make, the reservation to use the shul for mundane purposes, it allows us to use it for purposes of mitzvah, which is to be able to have a shalosh shuris or a sudas mitzvah, a siyum mesechta, a siyum, some other sudas mitzvah in the shul. Finally, we have the shita of the Rashi and the Or HaZeruah, that the tnai, the condition, helps completely. That the shul is, for all intents and purposes, it can be used for mundane purposes. The tnai helps. So the question was, then why did Rava have to justify entering the shul if there's a built-in condition? So says the Or HaZeruah, they were being machmir. It was an act of piety. Heim hechmiru al atzman mimidas chasidus. The truth is that the condition would have allowed Rava, or it would have allowed anybody for that matter, to enter the shul to spare themselves the rain. You're right, the condition does help. It helps while the shul is standing, and it helps even if it's not an extenuating circumstance. According to Rashi and the Or HaZeruah, the tnai, the condition, gives you a green light to use the shul for any purpose. The reason Rava was being strict was a personal stringency that he wanted to maintain a certain level of Kedusha, Mimidas Chasidas, but really it would have been permitted. So the same kind of answers that we said before, allowing a Talmud Chacham to use the Beis Medrash, we have similar answers explaining away the condition of the shul. When a shul is built in Bavel, and the Poskim say this is an assumption everywhere, the shul is built conditionally that you should be allowed to use the shul for mundane purposes. But Tosfos severely restricts this condition only to when the shul is no longer in use. As long as the shul is being used as a shul, the condition doesn't help, and you have to observe the full force. The halachas apply full force. The Ramban says even while the shul is in use, you can use the shul under extenuating circumstances, a shalosh shuris, a sudas mitzvah, because you have to accommodate the people, the space, or other tzarchei mitzvah, to house or to host aniyim or something of the like. Rashi and the Or HaZeruah say that the tnai completely helps. It's just that Rava was a personal stringency for midas chasidus, not to use the shul for mundane purposes, but he really would have been allowed to, not only a Talmud Chacham, anybody nowadays would be allowed to use the shul because there's an assumption that the shuls were built with a stipulation. Three terutzim. Now, what's the pshat? And this is a beautiful explanation from the Chafetz Chaim, from the Bir Halacha. What's the pshat in the Tosfos and the Rush? How does the Tosfos and the Rush say that a stipulation wouldn't help? It only helps when the shul is no longer in use. Why wouldn't the stipulation help? Right? According to the Ramban and according to Rashi, the stipulation does help even while the shul is in use, at least to a certain extent, according to the Ramban. But according to Tosfos and the Rush, that as long as the shul is in use, you're not allowed to use the shul for mundane purposes. Why doesn't the stipulation work? What is this compromise that the shul, the condition only works when the shul is not in use, but when the shul is in use, the condition doesn't work? Says the Bir Halacha, a beautiful explanation, and the Igros Moshe, Rav Moshe Feinstein, picks up on that and goes with this use as well, with this explanation as well. We said before, from the Pasuk in Yecheskel, that Hashem promises the Jewish people that there's going to be a Mikdash Ma'at, that we're going to have a miniature sanctuary during the times of the Golos. So explains the Bir Halacha that Tosfos and the Rush hold that there's actually a mitzvah on the community to build a shul and to have in their midst a Mikdash Ma'at. So imagine if you're collecting money, you're building a shul, and then you stipulate, we want to be able to do whatever we want with the shul. We plan to daven in the shul, but we don't want the kedusha to be chal. It's almost like we're chasing away the shul. We don't want the kedusha to be chal. We reserve the right to use the shul for mundane purposes. We want our cake and we want to eat it too. We want a shul. We want to be able to have a place to daven, but we want to reserve the right to use it for mundane purposes. Says the Bir Halacha, if you do this, then you're not fulfilling the mitzvah of building a Mikdash Ma'at. The whole purpose of having a Mikdash Ma'at is to have a place in your midst, that the community should have a place which is reserved for Kedusha, like a miniature Beis HaMikdash. If we're going to build a Beis HaKnesses and find the loophole that will have a place to daven, but we'll also have a social place where we can just go and hang out and use it for mundane purposes, then we didn't accomplish the objective. The objective is to have a mikdash ma'at in our midst. It's a beautiful explanation from the Bir Halacha. That would be the explanation for the Tosfos and the Rush, why the stipulation doesn't help as long as the shul is in use. If the shul is no longer in use, we're not using it anyway, so then okay, the stipulation says that you're not required that the land, the karka, or the empty building should have some kind of kedusha. But at least while you're using it for the davening or for the learning, we should fulfill the mitzvah of having a mikdash ma'at in our midst. That would be the reason why Tosfos and the Rush would not allow us to make a stipulation on the shul while it's standing. Now, so it could very well be that if a person makes a stipulation on the shul and we avail ourselves to completely treat the Beis HaKnesses for mundane purposes, it could be, says the Bir Halacha, that we're not fulfilling the mitzvah of building a Beis HaKnesses in our midst. According to Tosfos and the Rush, you're not allowed to make a stipulation to use it while the shul is in use. According to the Ramban, the stipulation allows us to use it under extenuating circumstances. So arguably, we still fulfill the mitzvah because we're not using the shul for mundane purposes if we can avoid it. We're only using it for mundane purposes under extenuating circumstances. But according to Rashi and the Or Zeruah, that the stipulation would allow us to use it for whatever we want, so arguably the Bir Halacha would say that we might not be fulfilling the mitzvah of building a mikdash ma'at in our midst. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein explains, though, that let's say a community is only here temporarily. Imagine lo yaleinu, like in wartime or back in the day when the Jewish community wasn't sure if they're going to settle themselves permanently, then it would be advisable to build the Beis HaKnesses on a condition, and temporarily you won't fulfill the mitzvah of having Beis HaKnesses, and that way we can avoid all the issues of what to do with the shul if and when the community has to move and relocate somewhere else. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, and this is in item Chaf Gimel, we're almost finished, the minhag ha'olam is to rely on the Ramban that the condition works al kolponim b'shas hadchak, and the gather is that there is some kedusha there. Rav Moshe Feinstein says in Chelik Aleph Mem Hey that kimdumani, that he says it appears to me that the minhag is even to be makel shaloi b'shas hadchak, based on Rashi and the Or Zeruah. Rav Moshe Feinstein, just from observance, just observing what's going on, people seem to be mekel, and we're mekel even shloi b'shas hadchak. There's a famous tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein that he allowed a blind person, Rachmanu Litzlan lo yaleinu, to enter the shul with a seeing eye dog, with his kelev, with his dog. The question was asked, can the person enter the shul and daven with his dog? So imagine there's a dog sitting right next to the congregant. And the reason why he has a dog there is because the dog helps the person. You know, nowadays they also have like therapeutical dogs, so besides seeing eye dogs. Even for a person that could see, if the person is depressed or the person is lonely, so sometimes the person takes the dog with him wherever he goes. So the question is, could he bring the dog into shul with him? So Rav Moshe Feinstein brilliantly, how would somebody decide this, right? How would we decide if you can bring your dog, your seeing eye dog, into the shul? How would a person decide this halacha? We have to see what category does bringing an animal into the Beis HaKnesses, what does that fall under? So Rav Moshe Feinstein brilliantly brings a Yushalmi that a Talmud Chacham, so this was the first exemption, a Talmud Chacham, where everybody agrees that a Talmud Chacham, at least mitnei hadoichik, like the Rambam says, is allowed to eat or drink in the shul. So it says in Yushalmi that a Talmud Chacham was allowed to bring his donkey into the Beis Medrash, into the shul, because that's where he was going to be spending his lodgings that night, because he needs a place to stay. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says, at the very least, you see from Yushalmi that bringing your donkey, where you travel, your riding donkey, your horse or your donkey, into the shul is not worse than eating or drinking. We might have thought that it's more of a bizayin, but it's not worse than eating or drinking. So says Rav Moshe, since nowadays the shul is built on a condition where at the very least The minhag is to be relying on the Ramban, that for extenuating circumstances, one can eat or drink in the shul. And that's where Rav Moshe Feinstein says that it even appears to him that people are even more lenient to rely on the opinion of Rashi and the Arzarua to use the shul even for completely mundane purposes, even if it's not extenuating circumstances. So a person would be allowed to bring his seeing eye dog into the shul, or if you're traveling with a horse and buggy, a horse, and you don't feel comfortable leaving your horse outside, you can bring your horse into the shul. Rav Moshe Feinstein does suggest that the person who's bringing his donkey or his dog into the shul should take a back seat in order not to startle the other congregants that you're bringing your German Shepherd into the shul. You should sit by the back where you're a little bit inconspicuous sitting in the back, but he does permit it. So in conclusion, the Poskim write that lechatchila, ideally, the best thing would be to be noyig like the Rush, that not to rely on the stipulation as long as the shul is in use. Like ideally, if we would be able to upkeep the sanctity of the base measure, imagine if we wouldn't schmooze idle chatter in the shul, we wouldn't eat or drink in the shul at all, and we mamish would fulfill the mitzvah of having a mikdash ma'at. Imagine how much blessing that would bring the community. Ideally, we should keep the level of a mikdash ma'at. Second best would be to rely on the opinion of the Ramban, that only to use the actual sanctuary under extenuating circumstances. And finally, we do have the Rashi and the Or Zeruah to rely on, that the condition that's built into the shul would allow us even to use the shul when it's not extenuating circumstances. But as we say, the Paiskim say, they encourage us to try to keep the Kedusha of the Beis HaKnesses as much as we can. Okay. Yasher Koyach, everybody.
Rabbi Burr, I have a question.
Yes.